Welcome, everyone, to the pilot slash potentially unaired episode of the Final Warfield podcast. This is the first news podcast we're going to run. I'm Jackson Warfield, and I'm joined by Final Gaming.
Hey, everyone.
I guess gaming is your last name. I never really asked you that.
Yeah, you know, I named myself that way back when, and it's kind of gotten in the way. I've been thinking about rebranding, but
yeah,
now that I have so many videos out.
The name change process is only a little bit of red tape. Actually, hold on. I got to turn off my boiler because, of course, that clicked on in the middle of this. Hold on. That's the perils of recording in a dungeon, unfinished basement like I am. But for those of you that may be listening to this, this is a test run in a way. Our plan is to get a podcast together. We go over all of the news and what's happenings and things like that in tabletop gaming and for the topics that our viewers may be interested in. At least that's what I think we're going to do. I don't know. We'll end up changing it. Maybe we'll be a cooking podcast after a couple months.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. I guess, actually, there probably is some overlap there. All right, so the handful of topics to talk about today. We're going to talk about Warhammer news. We're going to talk about board game hotness. We're going to talk a little bit about conventions. I believe we're going to talk about some trading card games and seeing what's coming new. But I wanted to start off here with talking about Kickstarters. Now,
Kickstarter
for those of you that are just listening to this podcast because I guess you like the sound of our voices and don't know what Kickstarters are, it's a big deal for board gaming. I probably should just call them crowdfunding projects. So a lot of board games will go through either Kickstarter or now GameFound and get a bunch of people to pay for the game before they actually start making it. So it's a way of, I don't know why it is with tabletop gaming that crowdfunding campaigns were so big compared to other industries, but Kickstarter became basically a tabletop gaming website. I found for example, the biggest Kickstarter of all time was the game Kingdom Death Monster, which I think raised like $12 million back in like 2017 or so.
And I think we're in the wrong field here.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, and Kingdom Death Monster, I don't have it, although I know some people who have actually asked if I'd help paint it, and I actually referred them to Final, and I don't know if he's gotten the contact form yet. But what I want to do with these Kickstarters here, what I think it would be a good idea, is to talk about what Kickstarter campaigns or GameFound campaigns are ending soon, because you have to decide usually if you want to buy into these. Now, to be fair, not all Kickstarters end exactly when they're scheduled to end. You can always become a late backer in these games. But it's worth reviewing because it's not always obvious which games are going to be good, because not many people are getting to play these games. But by at least talking through them, it can really help people decide whether or not they want to spend an irresponsible amount of money on a game that won't come out for a good year and a half and might be terrible, but also might be amazing. And yeah, just help that decision point. So I'm going to stop rambling and instead now go into some of the Kickstarters here that are ending soon. So the biggest one that's on my radar, is Blood Rage Valhalla, but we can talk about that next week, because Blood Rage Valhalla has, I think, 10 days left. So Blood Rage Valhalla is the sequel to Blood Rage. A more pressing decision is whether or not someone wants to actually invest in the Elden Ring board game. So this is the Elden Ring Rotten Sorcery. Final, have you played Elden Ring?
I've seen videos. I've watched enough videos of it.
Yeah. I played the video game a little bit. I played it with a coworker friend too, so I got to play it cooperatively. It's a game that I really wish came out when I was like in college and I could just go nuts. Cause I used to, when I was in college, you know, way back when, I used to play a lot of Ninja Gaiden Black, and I used to try and see if I could like beat the game on like Master Ninja difficulty. And I wish that I had the time to really dive into Elden Ring. I think Elon Musk even said it was like he thought it was the best piece of media ever created. But
yeah, no, I agree with you there. I'm definitely too old for Souls-like games now.
Yeah. I made it through maybe like the first major boss in the game, but as far as the board game is concerned, I think we are talking about a little bit of a different animal. So looking through these Elden Ring board games, so this one is called Rotten Sorcery. And this is not the first of the Elden Ring tabletop games, I believe, to be pitched. Because if you look on Board Game Geek, there's a handful of these out there. And they're not particularly highly rated, but they have a ton of miniatures if you get like the full all-in pledge. And I actually did see like the all-in pledge for this is 258 euros be in dollars. Is that also a lot of dollars?
Wait, I'm getting 364 euros. Or these
364? Okay.
Yeah, these are euros, I think.
Yeah, I see here the golden pledge was at, maybe it's been lowered a bit, 258 euros. All the live campaign content. And just looking at the pictures, that looks like a lot of high quality miniatures. It doesn't appear that it's, based on the Board Game Geek ratings, I don't know if that's just people intentionally adjusting the rating or not, but it seems like this is one, if you like the miniatures, you consider buying it. I wouldn't be hopeful that it's a good game. It might be trying to follow the Kingdom Death Monster kind of a model. I would, again, if the miniatures hit your fancy, and if you're listening to this podcast, they very well may be up your alley, I would consider it for that reason, but I wouldn't buy this if I'm expecting a high quality board game. I don't know. Finally, do you have any impressions from looking at this?
I'm scrolling through. I mean, that's a lot of miniatures. I wonder if this is anything like the Dark Souls one, which I thought did pretty well. People seem to like that one.
Yeah, Dark Souls. I've actually seen the Dark Souls board game a lot on Facebook Marketplace, I think.
That doesn't bode very well then.
Yeah, I think there are two types of games that show up on Facebook Marketplace. Games that people spend a lot of money on that they don't play and they need to try and recoup their losses. Or games that they just are so expansive they just never get to play. I mean, I guess there's a third category of just tiny games people are trying to sell because they're moving. And for some reason, people just can't figure out a way to justify moving their board game collection when they move, you know, down the street. I don't understand it. I would just buy a moving truck specifically for my games if I had to, but
you might need a couple.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess it depends on how many, what size U-Haul is available for rent at the time. Well, that's my vote, I would say, for Elden Ring. This looks like this is a miniatures campaign more so than a gaming campaign. And we have a few other ones. What will maybe be more interesting, more on the board gaming side when it comes out, is launching by the time this podcast is posted, you know, privately posted, is Andromeda's Edge Genesis, which is a continuation of Andromeda's Edge, which actually is, I think, one of the best. I haven't played it firsthand, but based on a lot of critic rankings, is one of the best board games to be released in the last, you know, 2 years. So we'll keep an eye out for that. So that's what I'm seeing on the GamePound side. Kickstarter, yeah, actually, it's funny. If you want to talk about video game board games, Assassin's Creed Animus has got 35 hours to go as we're recording this. So, and now that I've said that, anyone can triangulate when exactly this is being recorded.
But I guess who went in on the biggest pledge?
Oh, yeah. Wait, does that mean you went on the biggest pledge?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I probably did it within the first 15 minutes of it launching.
Oh, wow. All right. So, yeah, I'm guessing you played Assassin's Creed while I was playing Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah.
All right. That's interesting. Also, it has a lot of these busts, though. Is that like, is the miniatures actual busts here, like that you can paint? Or
I'm trying to pull it up now. I think those are just the models.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's like they're bust-shaped kind of models. I don't think they're actually the size of human busts.
Yeah, no, yeah, those are just the models. I'm hoping it's good. I didn't actually look into it at all. I just tend to buy whatever Assassin's Creed things come out first.
Oh, okay. All right,
and then regret it later.
Yeah, that's fair. Is that the first Assassin's Creed tabletop game that's come out? I wouldn't be shocked. Looks like there was...
I think so.
Apparently, there may have been a board game in 2014 on Board Game Geek that has a 4.0 rating from one person. Huh. All right. So, probably not a continuation of that.
Fun fact, it's by, the biggest thing that sold me on it was Mantic Games is doing the Kickstarter. And I believe they're doing the Halo, or they did the Halo board game, miniatures game as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. And that's, you know, the Halo Flashpoint, right? Because Halo Flashpoint, that's the game that when we started getting into Warhammer, my wife was like, wouldn't you be getting into more of a Halo kind of a game? Like, because I was already interested. I've been playing Halo since that came out.
It's not too late.
Yeah, that's true. It's just the wall of shame has gotten so big by the time Halo Flashpoint started to become a bigger game that now it's just tough to squeeze it in. So, all right. So it looks like our verdict is for the Assassin's Creed nuts, like final, get the Assassin's Creed, you know, back that Kickstarter. And if you really want the miniatures from Elden Ring, which are of the Dark Souls style, that actually seems like it could be a reasonable price. Is it time to talk Warhammer?
Well, maybe one more thing. I don't know if you want to talk about games that are coming out or launching soon.
Yeah, soon.
Just through... so people can kind of catch the early bird specials. Well, Kickstarter, GameFound.
Oh, you mean on those sites? Yeah, we can do that. Yeah, which ones? Anyone you have in mind? Or
yeah, so the Don't Starve board game. I'm not sure if you heard of Don't Starve. It's a kind of like a horror survival indie PC game. Pretty fun.
I actually haven't, but let me try to bring this up here.
But the Kickstarter is finally launching after being coming soon for, I think, 2 years now. But it's finally coming. They finally have a date, September 30th. And if you hit the early bird, I think it's within the first 24 hours, there's a nice Wolfgang model. Wolfgang's the bodybuilder guy who gets stronger as he eats.
Which date does that actually start?
The 30th.
Oh, the 30th. Oh, okay. Oh, so we got a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
But just in case anyone needs to prep their budget.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I mean, especially with some of the, you know, top tier pledges people can put, it might take some time to set it aside. There are some other ones that are worth, you know, I know board gamers are keeping in mind. You have the Brass Pittsburgh. So the sequel to the number one game on Board Game Geek is coming up at some point in the future here. And yeah, the two live ones here that we'll have to recap definitely next week are Blood Rage Valhalla and Ark Nova 3 edition, I guess 3rd edition. I don't know why it's called 3 edition. I guess, yeah, I do think GameFound has kind of probably surpassed Kickstarter as far as having the most often discussed games. So
was Blood Rage the one where we had the Ragnarok or something every once in a while? Was
that that's game? Blood Rage.
Okay.
Blood Rage is the miniatures game that kind of, I guess, disguises itself. It's a card game that disguises itself as a miniatures game. I haven't gotten a really great game of Blood Rage in yet, despite it being very highly rated by some people. That might be one to bring to a work game night one of these nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something nice like that. Although maybe we're robbing next week's content now.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, let's not
steal. Next week's going to be a 5-minute podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, the first podcast now that everyone can actually listen to. And that's it.
Warhammer news.
All right, so what Warhammer topics are we going to rob from next week?
Ooh, well, Warhammer is nice because they have the pre-order previews every week. So the big one this week was the Hellsmiths of, you know, I probably should learn how to pronounce this first. Hashut.
God bless you.
Yeah. The Chaos Dwarves. How about that? The Chaos Dwarves army box is going to go on pre-order on the, now I'm trying to do math because I don't have a calendar, the 13th. Pretty exciting. Although I don't know, I guess by the time you post this, it'll be up for pre-order and probably sold out.
Yeah. I don't know. I might post it before then. Hopefully we'll get some time, but it'll probably sold out. I mean, I don't know. This looks to me like, I don't know. Maybe we haven't seen too many new factions come out for Sigmar since we got into it, but this might be one of the coolest looking Sigmar factions. And I think that's saying something.
Yeah, that giant bolt effigy thing. I mean, so that does come in the army box. And I don't know. It's just tempting to buy the whole box just for that one.
Yeah, that one. Well, also the prices are going up soon too. So
yeah. Yeah, so we have the 4% increase. Across the board, well, not across the board, on average, probably less than a month away. Maybe I should have the army box. It's a small box though. It's only 14 minis. It's a spearhead, which is 13, plus the giant bull effigy. whose name I can't. I think it's the Dominator engine. I might be making that up.
Is the Dominator, is that not supposed to be part of the Spearhead then? Or is it just...
It's just extra. So the Spearhead is the are the other 13 models.
Oh, okay. I have to say, these guys, we talked about these in one of our, in I think it was the live stream reaction. This was a high point. I think they look pretty cool.
All right. So, you know, you can get it. You can get the Spearhead, and I'll take the Dominator engine off your hands.
No, oh, geez.
Sounds,
okay.
Sounds like a deal.
All right. You're clicking in the background because I'm applying for another credit card.
But besides that, Necromunda, which we haven't really looked at, have some pretty cool models coming out. The Palanite Enforcers, and they come with a new supplement. But the reason I'm pointing them out, I've been wanting to paint my... Oh, man, I got to learn how to pronounce all this stuff. Arbites? Arbites? The Arbites. Warhammer Cops.
I've heard both. I don't know which it is.
I've been wanting to paint my Judge Dredd models over again. And these guys kind of look cool. Like good proxies for them.
Honestly, Necromunda does have a lot of interesting models. Like, and I've actually seen, at one point, there was like an ATV that was going for $20. And I almost just bought it because it's, you know, that could be anything. It could be something you throw in with the Votan or something like that. I mean, Necromunda also, I think a lot of people swear by Necromunda as a game because it's more of a skirmish game. It's not like Warhammer getting shoehorned into a skirmish game. It's genuinely, you know, it's the gang warfare. So it's, I don't know, that's always out there. I think that I agree with you. I think it'd be a fun painting project, but I still got more backed up in Legions of Imperialis that I have to get to first, but I don't know. How tempted are you?
I think someday I'll send you a picture of my pile of shame. And then you might take away my credit cards. Oh. So well, they're tempting, but I just turn around, look at the wall of shame and I'm good.
Yeah. That might have to be an episode of, or like an actual video, is like just game planning how to clear out the wall of shame. Cause as bad as I'm sure yours is, I just have the double cause I also got so many, you know, board games that I keep buying, like such as in my series, oops, I bought it. And I technically have two walls of shame. They're just angled, you know, against each other. So I have the corner of shame where they meet, and that's where I sit all day.
Well, see, that's why you need that ADU we were talking about. Just extra storage space. You don't have to see it every day.
Oh yeah. That could actually work. Or if I'm eventually going to relocate, I might as well just get some trailers now and just park them in the backyard. And then I can easily move and I don't have to sell it on Facebook Marketplace, even though that might be a small mercy when that day comes. All but, right.
Well, wrapping up Warhammer news, big news from this morning. I'm not sure how big it is because they didn't save it for a stream. They kind of just shadow dropped it, but the Jukari are getting their codex finally.
That's interesting. And that would have been extremely useful back when we started because our, one of our fellow, compadres that started at Warhammer at the same time was somehow drawn to the, you know, the S&M elves, and he's no longer in the hobby, but that maybe this can draw him back in. Who knows?
Peer pressure, maybe, or we'll get him something for Christmas.
Yeah,
but peer pressure. Jukari are getting a new HQ like named character, and I'm thinking it's pronounced Lady Malice. I want to say Malice, but I think it's Malice. But they're also getting a new Archon model, Combat Patrol, and Battle Force. And I wish I could say more whether they're good or bad, but I really don't know anything about them. I kind of thought they were going to get folded up into like the Eldari Codex or something like that.
I feel like Jukari is the one that they just are not going to do that with the elves. You know, I feel like you could see like Exodites and different things get spun off again as an attempt to make a third space elf faction, but I don't know. I don't think they can ever cross the cross the Rubicon of trying to roll Jukari back into Eldari. Not that I don't know if they ever were rolled in, to be honest, but that seems like that. I feel like that would be a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean they're different enough, but they're just like the forgotten one out of all the factions. I mean
they are just
plus kind of sad.
It is, and they're also the one faction that takes it too far, even for me, because I actually like that aesthetic at first, but then when you get more into the torture aspect of Drukhari, that's why I'm just like, all right, that might be a little bit much. Like the, because I like the, you know, I like aspects of chaos. I think it's the charming aspect of 40K. But Drukhari, I mean, if they leaned a little bit more into like, you know, inject yourself with these crazy chemicals to get you to become a good battler, that kind of a thing, like that kind of a dark side, which I think it does touch on a little bit. I like that. But the, I don't know. It's like the aesthetic doesn't hit it for me. I wonder with how much Warhammer has grown, if that's another example of like maybe when it was a little bit more of a niche hobby, it was a higher percentage of it. And just there are more people that are just, you know, a little bit more like normies that are not as drawn to like, the more you torture this guy, the more energy. I don't know that much about it, but I just know that they, you know, take pleasure in that.
I also have a penitent engine for you on your Christmas list.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah.
We all remember how much you like that one.
Yeah. I'm not going to go too far up brand there, though. I don't want to try and explain. People are going to think that I'm overly excited for the G.I. Joe Heroescapes, which I'm like, okay, yeah, it's fine. But I'm not that I don't need to go that PG for my theming.
Although Heroescape is pretty PG. I guess I don't know that much about the lore.
To be honest, for as much as I've played it in my life, neither do I, because the lore just, I don't think it's that interesting compared to things like Warhammer, obviously. It's kind of shoehorned in to this setting, because when Heroescape first came out in like 2004, 2005, it was intended to be just a mix. So they created a setting that justifies mixing, for example, modern soldiers with historical warriors with dragons and winged humanoid creatures and all these other monsters and their soul borgs, which is, you know, like the living robots. So they've created one where they're just, everyone's being summoned through time to fight a battle, and the generals are kind of like the factions, but the game again was designed so you didn't have to just pick a faction. So the story was never that important. And some other people that liked the game liked it for that reason too. But for the same reason that having faction selection in Warhammer is a big part of the fun, because it's fun to build an army and to paint an army that everything matches. Heroescape, by virtue of being such a variety, actually, I think disincentivizes you from trying to build your army. And it's more of a collector type of a thing. And that's why I always thought it was good for game nights, which might be part of why Heroescape never fully, like, really takes off to the degree of something like Warhammer it is, because once you get past the point of, like, we just like to play the game, there's not as much to do because you don't have the army building stuff. Although, if it keeps getting more expensive like it has, maybe it will be one where you can only afford one faction. You can't mix it anyway.
I think that's just the shipping. It seems pretty affordable, for at least for me right now. It's not as bad as Warhammer is. But yeah, you're also not required to buy 50 different boxes.
Right. You know, actually the point scaling isn't too far off from Warhammer, but the idea of having a 2000 point Heroescape army is just like, what on earth are you doing? Usually you play the game as both sides get 400 or 500 points.
Although on the topic of Heroescape, the new free scenario just came out today. We still got to play these things.
Yeah, that's true. The scenario play was interesting with Heroescape too, just because it takes a while to build a scenario, and it's nice to have something that a map that's balanced. So some of these scenarios, I think, yeah, we gotta get these played. Although to be fair, most of the scenarios that we've been playing have been ones that my 5-year-old has come up with on a whim, and we just have to, you know, we do the thing where one person chooses like where the starting zones are, and this other person gets to choose which side. Then they got to incentivize the person putting the starting zones down, does it fairly. But I don't know, maybe that's what we need to do, is we need to release Jackson Warfield's son's scenarios, and then everyone can play those.
Yeah, once he gets older, he'll have to start writing the stories for them.
It will be ready for that sooner rather than later, especially because they're coming up with like G.I. Joe. Like, he's coming right into the, we're talking like 3 years from now, he's going to be super into something like G.I. Joe's.
Stay tuned for a new channel.
Yeah, right. His will actually, you know, he's going to just find a way to get Hot Wheels cars to fit on there. All right. Anything else for Warhammer news, or should we get into the board game hotness?
No, Warhammer is all set.
All right. So, for board game hotness. So what this section of the podcast is going to be is I want to talk about a lot of what the most Well, on BoardGameGeek.com, there's actually a section called The Hotness. And to be honest, that's probably going to be the main source here for what board games are worth talking about. And if you go to The Hotness at this particular moment in time, the number one game is actually a new addition to the list. It's called The Great Sea. And because it's so new, I don't know anything about The Great Sea. It's made by Garfield Games, which is famous for games like Raiders of the North Sea, Paladins of the West Kingdom, all of those, you know, the South Tigris, all those different geographic direction categorized games. I spent a little bit more time looking at the number two game, which is also new to The Hotness, which is called Emberheart. Emberheart is interesting because it's made by Mindclash Games. Mindclash Games created the game. It's known for two games, Anachrony and Tricarion. And both of these games, well, also Cereria, but that one wasn't that good. Anachrony especially is a famous game because it's been in the Board Game Geek Top 100 pretty much since it was released. For a long time, I think it was the heaviest game in the Board Game Geek Top 100. It's a game where you're battling through time and you have these mechs. And it was, for a long time, it was probably the most difficult game to get played of all the games in the Board Game Geek Top 100. And this publisher is now back, and we have Emberheart, which is a dragon taming theme. So if anybody likes either, I guess, How to Tame Your Dragon, or apparently a big kids book series is Wings of Fire. That sounds like that might be a similar thing. I don't know if kids at the Wings of Fire reading age are going to be also familiar with a board game geek on board game hottest games like Emberheart.
Hey, it's something to talk to your kids about.
Yeah, that's true. Although we haven't tried to buy Wings of Fire for my daughter just because I think it actually is kind of graphic in the first issue, because I think like a dragon gets like skinned or something like that. Oh. Or like flayed, I mean. Yeah. Which seems kind of intense. A lot of people swear by the series and they'll often kind of just gloss past that, but I don't know. That if dragons being flayed in a kid's book seems like a lot.
Have you ever heard of Serenissima? Serenissima?
No, and I'm not sure if you're pronouncing that right.
No. That's how it's phonetically pronounced, I assume.
So is this Serenus, are we talking a like a children's book, or are we talking like a miniatures game? What is it?
So it's a game. Well, kind of going back to The Great Sea, apparently it's very reminiscent of that game.
Oh, okay.
It would have been more helpful if either of us knew what. Oh, it means Republic of Venice.
Oh,
it's Italian. Okay.
All right. Well, maybe that's why this is good. This is on the unaired episode. Because I was mainly looking, I looked at Emberheart. I will say I'm excited. I feel like I'm on the verge of playing The Fate of the Fellowship. Lord of the Rings, The Fate of the Fellowship is the cooperative Lord of the Rings theme game made by Matt Leacock of Pandemic fame. And it is rated right now an 8.2 on BoardGameGeek. It is climbing up the top games of all time. It was the top game on The Hotness for, I would guess, about a month. I think people keep track of this. There's probably a way to actually look this up to see how long it was on The Hotness. But it fell from The Hotness just in time for us to record this podcast. So it's down to number three. But that's still pretty high. I'm hoping that maybe by the next time we record here that I'll have played it, but we'll see.
Do you own it?
Yes, and I actually opened it too, so it's right there. I haven't assembled we're gonna have to figure out this talking over each other thing. I haven't assembled the dice tower yet, but that's the last step, and then it's gotta get played.
Well, hurry up, we gotta play it.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. It's also a little bit too high in complexity to play with the kids, so it might be in a the adults play it. Then we also, the other one I wanted to mention was number six and number seven on The Hotness are different versions of the game Container. And there's a new version of the game Container out, so there will be a third version here. The reason why I want to mention this, I heard about the game Container, I think it was on a Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, probably 6 years ago. And the idea is it's a game where everyone's on an island. I'm assuming the new one's going to be like this too. Everyone manages their shipping company. Well, they're all on this island, and it's like this closed economy where the only way money gets onto the island is through these like stimulus packages that got sent out, and you have to ship your containers back. But the game used to come with these like big chunky container ships and like containers you put on them. And apparently it was a great game, at least according to Shut Up and Sit Down Guys, it was. But it was really, really hard to find. And it just stuck in my head. So when I saw this pop up here, I'm excited. I'm almost certainly going to end up with the new version of Container, which I think is 2026, if I got the version right. Looks like the older one's the 2007 and the 2026 version is up there. It re-implements both 2007's Container and 2018's Container 10th Anniversary Jumbo Edition, which actually is, I think, what Shut Up and Sit Down reviewed. So we got container ships in the future, too.
So is it out for order yet?
Well, given that the year is 2026, I'm pretty sure. Pre-order? Yeah, I'll have to see. I guess that's what I should be researching before we talk about this stuff. we'll have to get things all sorted out here in terms of what's coming on a crowdfunding campaign, what's just coming out next year, what's getting revealed at conventions. While talking about things getting released and a lot of excitement around that, can you tell us what's going on in the world of trading card games?
Well, TCG News. Besides the usual Pokemon scalping fun for Magic, I'm going to gloss over the Pokemon part. For Magic, the Spider-Man set's coming out later this month, September 26th. And of course, it's already mostly sold out everywhere. I think the only thing you can get right now is the booster box from Amazon for like $200 or something like that.
Oof.
So kind of a pain.
That's a lot. YouTube keeps screaming at me that and say, like, you will like this video, where someone just, I think it's just post saying, like, I'm super lukewarm on Spider-Man Magic the Gathering.
I don't know. These crossovers, they were cool at first, but now there's just too many of them. And I remember seeing somewhere that they said they realized that these aren't doing as well as their normal sets, but I don't know. They're still coming. I mean,
that's not good. These sets that we're putting all this extra effort into that are treated as being special are doing worse than just the regular old stuff that we don't need to license.
Yeah. I'm actually curious how much money they actually make off of these things.
Apparently negative money, because it's taking up resources from just more Magic, I guess, unless there's possible to go too quick.
Yeah. Well, because I know after the Spider-Man one, I think November, they have Avatar The Last Airbender. That crossover is coming. So that's great.
A lot.
I tried getting back into Magic, I think like 2 years ago, and these sets come out way too fast. I think by the time I actually got my hands on like a solid deck, or not even a solid deck, like a playable deck, we're already two or three expansions behind. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Ironically, I think there are games, I mean, I think Heroescape's an example of a game that would do well from crossovers like this, but they're just not big enough to buy all the licenses. They did do a Marvel crossover in the initial run, and it was like 2008, 2009. It was one of the most famous aspects of the Heroescape iceberg is that there were Gen Con photos of the second Marvel expansion that ever got released. A game like that, I could see it helping. But I guess with Magic, yeah, there's a reason why, you know, Fantasy Flight Games came out with Living Card Games, is because keeping up with some of these games, not to mention the price of Pokemon cards, is just impossible. But they did have the advent calendars at Costco for Pokemon cards. So I bought one of those because that was reasonably priced. I don't know how many people are trying to buy advent calendars like, you know, 20 years from now either.
Well, maybe, I don't know. You might want to take a look at Reddit for that one. There's pictures of people literally taking pallets of them. It's insane. I don't even know why.
I got one. I got it for like $45 or something because it was at the entrance. I don't know why they put that at the entrance. Like, I probably should have gotten more, but it came with a Pokeball tin. This is insane. You know, it was like this early on in the pandemic where Pokemon cards, like, that's why like a lot of the shelves of Target say like max like one product per customer for some of the stuff. I'm surprised it happened again, because I remember I got an Evolving Skies like booster box for the price for like MSRP, like back in 2022 or whatever that was.
Are you opening your boosters, or are you trying to save them and see what they go up to in a couple of years?
I haven't opened them in a while. I think it started getting a little nuts, so I think we put the brakes a little bit on opening up the Pokemon cards for a bit. Plus, I got some old chaff that I can put into used, like, old wrappers, like, are the, you know, for Pokemon boosters. If you actually hold it, put it together well, you can kind of repack it. But if your kids are like under five, they won't know the difference.
Yeah, well, there's a whole industry for resealing them and scamming people.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to be under five.
Yeah, when I'm getting my coffee at Cumberland Farms, I see those with them too. This is the first time I think I've seen those since probably like 2021 timeframe.
Well, that's my backup. Just so you know, you're never safe with opening them. I think late last year, there's a set called Fusion Strike. I'm not sure if you heard of it, but
yeah,
it was like famous for not having any rares because some people stole them all from the factory.
Oh.
But yeah, I was like, oh, you know, they're basically worthless. There's two chase cards in it. I think it's the Moonbryon was one of them, and then the Altart Kengar. But we just like, oh, you know, they're easy, nobody cares about them, nobody likes them. I think we opened up probably 20 of them just for fun, and now apparently the prices have suddenly spiked this month, and it's like a vertical line.
Jesus.
So, well, that FOMO is real.
Well, I think Moonbryon I thought was Evolving Skies, but yeah, it I got to look at what some of this is, because I have like an Evolving Skies booster box. I don't know if I need to now put it on like my home insurance policy. Not a booster box. No, I don't have that. Otherwise, I could retire. I have an Evolving Skies ETB or something. I might have Fusion Strike there because I remember that.
So Fusion Strike, we bought them right off the shelf, $4 or $5. TCG player right now is $12.79.
Yeah.
Per booster pack.
That's nuts. I don't even know. And part of the thing is some of the tins, like the Pokeball tins, I don't know how to date them. You know what I'm talking about? With the tins, they don't say, it's like the tins where it has like, oh, it's an Embryon tin. Or Embryon. Oh, yeah. Umbreon. Embryon. It's like, now it's a fire version of Umbreon, regional variant. Umbreon tins. You know, but with the Pokeballs, you just have like, it's the Great Ball.
Pokeball tins. I'm not sure what... I know are the Pokemon tins, which are by set.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we had that investment. So everyone that decided to become a Pokemon investor within the last year is doing pretty well still.
Yeah, there's whole Reddits for it. It is insane. I think there's more discussion on there than like the personal finance or dividend sites.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad, actually.
Investment. Yeah. Well, if anything, hopefully this will distract and we can then finally get a good Bitcoin price again. Yeah.
But the last big news for TCG, I'm not sure if you've heard of the Gundam card game that Bandai launched probably a month and a half ago.
Oh, interesting.
But that's their Bandai's new hotness game. And it's just, it's been insane trying to get any kind of cards. They've been ridiculously sold out. And even stores, you know, local game stores and stuff, they're selling MSRP is $120 for a booster box. They're selling them for probably $220.
Wow.
But the second wave is still coming out. So prices have been coming down. TCG player booster box prices are finally under $160. So that's nice. So maybe, you know, I'll finally be able to get my hands on some actual reasonably priced cards.
Yeah. I mean, someday. I've always been tempted to get a Gundam for the model building reasons. And also, although I've been hesitant sometimes because then I'll realize that Warhammer, you know, Games Workshop could probably be doing a little bit more with their model kits. Not that they need to use the colored plastic models and like the colored sprues, but that's apparently some of those can be pretty nice with avoiding, I think it was mold lines or things like that. But what was the last big TCG to see released like this? I guess this is bigger. This is even bigger than Lorcana was, or maybe not quite to that degree. I guess it's a tougher time now.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I when they announced the Gundam card game, you know, I got pretty excited. I'm like, you know, Gundam, it's a big thing in Japan and Asia. No one's ever heard of it here. I mean, when was the? Have you heard of Gundam? You've heard of Gundam,
like the show. The show. Oh, I'm familiar with the property. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, I mean, the last big show was probably, I don't know, Seed, maybe 2003. And as soon as the cards came out, they've been sold out for. I don't even know how long. Right now, the only one that's launched it's called GD01. It's like the first set. And they've already sold out pre-orders for the third set, like GD03. Like that's how insane this game is going.
there's got to be a handful of other properties too that people are just saying, like, now if they see Gundam going like this, to be like, we need to make the Transformers trading card game, which actually they probably did that already. Like, there are a bunch of this, like, all right, the target, it's millennials, especially the older half of millennials, maybe not just the older half, but, you know, like, they gotta, there are people that just can't afford the other games, and they probably are looking for something new to jump into that strikes their fancy enough.
Yeah, well, whoever makes it, it'd be Bandai who makes it. If you look at their properties, they kind of do that. They kind of just pick some kind of license, throw it at a wall, hope it sticks for a while, and then come up with a new one.
Yeah, which is also kind of funny because I have I bought some of the, when they got cheap, some of the boosters boxes and the starter decks for Age of Sigmar Champions, the trading card game. I got that like a year ago. So I got like two booster boxes of that with all the starter decks that came out. The game was discontinued after like barely a year or two.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it wasn't, I don't know if that'll be worth anything. It seems like there's this weird divide between people who are spending an irresponsible amount of money on models versus irresponsible amount of money on trading card games. But, you know, maybe that'll be a good idea, and or one day I'm just gonna bust it out for a fun family game night, be like, we're all gonna take our different decks here, we're gonna build it, we're gonna play, and then I'm gonna double check and find, like, oh no, there goes, you know, that was one kid to college.
it's weird. Have they ever made a 40k trading card game?
That's worth looking up,
because I know the digital one I think is doing pretty well, because it's always one of the main features on the Skulls presentation.
Well, they made the when Fantasy Flight Games had the Warhammer license, they made Warhammer 40,000 Conquest, the living card game. So it was a deck construction game that you just didn't buy boosters for. But that's obviously a little bit different. That one also has its own chase cards and stuff like that. I played one game of that with Mrs. Warfield, and it was an interesting game. All of the Fantasy Flight games were kind of well done around that time, but the non-cooperative living card games just never really took off. So, but I have everything that I was reasonably able to get for that. That was another game that also was super cheap for a while. When they found it being discontinued, the price went down, and it hasn't had that bounce where people are now trying to find stuff because they learned about it years later. All right, well, that's it for TCG news. I guess one of the other categories, or one of the other sections here, is we want to talk about upcoming conventions, because there will be some interesting conventions, maybe even some that we go to in the future.
Incoming conventions.
And I guess the biggest one on the horizon is New York Comic Con, unless we're missing a big one, and that's on me if we're missing a big one. But have you ever been to New York Comic Con?
I haven't. I mean, it looks pretty tempting. What are we looking at? Like 100,000 people or something across the 3 or 4 days?
Yeah. I went one year. I think I went in 2019. And
when it was still safe. Good.
Yeah, right. That's kind of how a lot of my dating is, like, was it before or after 2020? But I remember going, and it was a few things were big at the time. In fact, maybe it was 2017 or 2018, because The Walking Dead was still big. Rick and Morty was also a big feature there. There wasn't that much in terms of gaming stuff necessarily, but I might be confusing in my head, because I also went to PAX East 2 or 3 years in a row around that time. So I did also see, I went to a panel. I went to, it was the Walking Dead creator had a panel, or had an interview, and he actually followed Neil deGrasse Tyson, who I remember because I sat there for the second half of Neil deGrasse Tyson just to get a good seat for Robert Kirkman. Neil deGrasse Tyson, while being interviewed, was going on his phone and like tweeting. And I remember just thinking, like, this guy is such a tool. If I needed any more reason to generally dislike Neil deGrasse Tyson, that was a pretty big one for me.
Yeah, I think that's the general consensus about him.
yeah, thankfully. All right, so with that, that convention potentially on the horizon, and more as it gets colder, including, I don't know, one year I really want to get the PAX Unplugged. That'll be probably the one we talk about the most leading up to it. Maybe I can justify going down to my family, which within striking distance of Philly. and say, like, we can't go down on Thanksgiving weekend. We have to go down on December 1st or whenever the actual convention is, just so I can go there. although I don't, that might not have any happening anyway. But what, so the last section we have for the podcast here is what WDYP, and P can stand for play or paint. So I'll ask you first. So
WDYP,
I guess this past week or so, what did you paint / what did you play?
So I finally cracked and started painting some Necron warriors. it's painful and very shameful. And I hang my head every time I start working on one, but I had a weird idea to make a YouTube video for Tomb World, which is coming out this Saturday. Speaking of which, our box should be coming soon. Wednesday, they said. But
yeah. Nice.
I was like, you know, I think it's finally time to paint some of these Necron warriors. I still have a bunch of Necrons that somebody won't take. So if I decide on a scheme, I might go for it and paint a couple more.
Wow. Yeah. So, and for anyone not familiar, when we first got into Warhammer, we have Final as Mr. Ultramarines and Jackson Warfield as Mr. Necron. So I have a decent amount of Necrons I got to paint. I was planning to put it in a video. I am letting other things been getting in the way of that for one reason or another that I'm going to gloss over. And, you know, maybe one of these painting videos will come up there. If maybe my rival here has some Necron painting videos, I'll do them, but we'll see. I'm looking at Necrons now. That's my biggest shelf in my display shelf here. I haven't painted a Necron since, what was the last one I got here?
It couldn't have been the Void Dragon, could it?
No. That's not the most recent. My most recent. I think my most recent one was actually. Hold on. Play the music. Hold on.
Oh wait, no, that's copyright. Shoot, cut that out.
Oh no. I don't know if you're on point enough.
I need like an off-key version.
Yeah. All right. I think it was the Ghost Arc. But that was the most recent one I did. I also tried this thing with my Necrons with one Necron. It was actually a kit bash that I bought for some reason. And I tried using chrome primer from Home Depot because I thought, hey, that could look kind of cool. It doesn't really work because it doesn't really let the paint stick as much as you'd hope. But I think it could be cool for having a Necron that's like up against a very bright light source, like facing the sun kind of a thing. If you had just half of it with the chrome. Because the chrome, you can't have too bright of silver on a Necron. I don't want to give you my tips. I'll save this for the video. But I'll say, like, the chrome Necron thing doesn't work with the rest of the cool stuff with the Necrons. And I'll just leave it at that for now.
So how would you paint a chrome Necron? Not that I'm working on right now. This very instant.
No. I would probably stay tuned for Jackson Warfield's eventual video.
So what have you been working on? Or what have you played?
Yeah, so I was doing more playing this week than painting, although I'll probably be painting tomorrow night. You know what? That reminds me. I need to do an Oops, I Bought It episode for my painting organization stuff, but I'll leave that aside for now, too. I don't want to steal too much from the future. But I played two games this week. One was the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring trick-taking game, and members have already seen I put a video up there with my one player review of it, and so I'll just be redundant with that now. That game, so it's a cooperative trick-taking game similar to games like The Crew, Quest for Planet Nine, and The Crew Mission Deep Sea, and there are other cooperative trick-taking games. It plays out it's kind of like you're playing spades, where everyone you're playing tricks with cards that are not going to be too different from a deck of 52 card deck of cards, and you have to coordinate. Well, one person has to get like three tricks, and this other person needs to get the fives of three different, effectively, suits and things like that. And they put a bit of a Lord of the Rings theme on it by having your character and your goals each round are somewhat related to different chapters in the Lord of the Rings to Fellowship of the Ring. And the game plays through 18 chapters within the story. And we have the copy that that Final and Purple Sushi actually gifted the Warfield household. And we have that. And then I also got another expansion, which is like one more chapter in there, because I saw that and I had to buy that. And so that's chapter 16 and a half, but a couple nights away from maybe getting there. So playing that, that was very good. I gave it an 8.4 with my review after playing the first three chapters.
Oh, and wow. That's
subject to change, but that's a pretty good rating. That's as like discussion for top 50. And the other game we played was, and I played this with my 8-year-old and 5-year-old. We played the downloadable expansion for Kids Chronicles, the Quest for the Moonstones. And the quest, this is the kids' version of Chronicles of Crime. So this is an app-integrated crime-solving board game. The Kids Chronicles implementation is a fantasy theming on that. And what you do is you have cards with QR codes, and you got a board with QR codes. And what you'll do is you'll scan a QR code for a location to say move to that location. And the game will tell you, like, oh, all right, now you're over here, or might say, oh, you can't travel there yet. And when you're at a location, you'll scan a QR code, for example, on a character's card to talk to them. And then when you're in a conversation with them, you can scan a QR code for like an object you have a card for, like, tell me about this gold coin. And they'll be like, oh, I remember that gold coin. It was over at the port. So like it's that kind of a game. And it also has a little bit of an AR thing where when you first get to a location, you hold your phone up and you look around the location, you know, like the 3D video thing.
Hmm.
And you're looking for what objects are there, and then you pick them up. And it's the kids version, one of the best kids games I've actually ever played. And the we played, there's the downloadable expansion to it. And just to put it on how well it is tuned in, so my 8-year-old actually solved one of the puzzles before I did. It's actually, and it was kind of easy, but it was like you had to be paying attention and you had to think outside the box a little bit. And so like it's a very well-designed game. I was glad to play it. I almost want to do a one-player review of the downloadable content expansion as an excuse to talk about the game itself. But we got that in, and that was fun. And we can only do it once a 3-year-old was already in bed. Otherwise, that probably would have made it a little bit too chaotic. But yeah, so that's what I played this week.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess as we keep paying. Well, yes, we will keep paying. That's a Freudian slip. Playing. Playing and painting stuff. We'll keep mentioning that. And I hope everyone enjoyed the first episode of the Final Warfield Gaming News Podcast, and which we may change the name. I don't know. What do you think we need to name this?
Maybe we should do that thing that you're doing in your video, and we just change the name every single episode.
Oh, yeah.
Until something sticks.
Yeah, we'll keep rotating through. Yeah, that's basically what I did with Jackson, originally Jackson Warfield's Game Room, and through many iterations, now it's Jackson's Warfield. So, okay, all right, so we'll start there. I always liked Warfield and Friends as a play on Garfield and Friends, but I don't need to take the spotlight entirely to myself, but we'll see. Maybe we'll try that out. All right, well, until next time, I'm Jackson Warfield.
And I'm Final Gaming.
All right. All right, now we need a catchphrase to exit, so I have no idea. All right.
You need like some kind of jazz outro, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I'll just play the music.